Hi, I'm Tim.
And I'm Ginny.
And we are
The Irreverents.
Hi.
I'm waiting for you to talk.
You're waiting for me? I'm not used to being able to talk first.
I know, that's so humiliating. When I'm doing the editing and I just like, it's just like all me talking.
That's funny. When yeah, I do much... the editing, is you talking too. I mean, that's
I know. Just... it is, but like, it's right. So painful.
It's more so painful to listen to yourself when you're editing. It really, and there's all the, and like, for me, it's like, I'm like.
So, and I start every sentence with
so. Yeah.
A needle pulling thread, la, a note to follow, so. Oh, wait, that was a different episode.
That was.
I know.
A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Another different
episode. Which was also a different episode.
Okay, so here we are.
Here we are at the end of the season of Epiphany,
that's
which
right.
I think ought to be a different color than green, but that's just me. I think Epiphany ought to be white.
White?
Yeah.
But so Epiphany's white, but then you have the season after Epiphany.
I know, but it should be all white. It shouldn't be the season after Epiphany. It should be the season of Epiphany.
You want it to be Epiphany all the time?
I do. I want it to be Epiphany all the time because
like,
it kind of is Epiphany all the time. And I was in Iceland and we saw Northern Lights
sleeps,
and that felt
epiphany,
like an
boom.
Epiphany. Huh?
The season that never sleeps is Epiphany. It's like New York.
Yeah. Like where there's light
all
the time.
Light all the time.
Right. Mm. It's like Iceland or Alaska in the summer. But we digress. It is the last Sunday before Lent and
it's
super late this year.
Super late. But not as late as it technically can be.
It can be like another week or, no, even more later. I remember one year.
Like
a week later?
It could be as many as 9 weeks in Epiphany.
And we're at 8.
Yeah. But, actually 10, because you have the 9th and then you have the last Sunday after the Epiphany, which is what we're doing now. Which
okay,
a lot of
whatever.
People are in the habit of saying is Transfiguration, but it's not. August 6 is always Transfiguration.
A lot of people, what he means by that is me.
But, well, I wasn't going to call you out by name,
but
yes.
I'm not a lot of people. I'm one of those lazy people who just says it's the reading is the transfiguration.
Yeah.
So I said it's the transfiguration, and then you were like the church nerd who called me out.
No.
But whatever.
August 6th.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
All right. Well,
sorry, not sorry.
Okay.
Look, it's in the rubrics of the prayer book. I mean, yeah, it's just, what am I supposed to do?
I know, but like, okay, whatever. All of us don't read the rubrics of the prayer book.
Oh, well, I'm just going to leave that alone.
Yeah. And it's okay.
No.
It's okay.
No,
God,
it's not.
Jesus loves me anyway.
Well, that much is true.
Okay, so I, my friend, am going to read the Hebrew Bible lesson from...
Exodus.
Yes, Exodus. Chapter 34, verses 29 to 35. And this is one of those stories that goes along with the reading from Transfiguration, which, of course, is not this actual Sunday, because this Sunday is the last Sunday after Epiphany, not the last Sunday of Epiphany, because Epiphany is not its whole season. It's just a day and a season after it, which makes no sense to me. But okay, I digress.
Over.
Maybe. Moses came down from Mount Sinai. As he came down from the mountain with the two tablets of the covenant in his hand, Moses did not know that the skin of his face shone because he had been talking with God. When Aaron and all the Israelites saw Moses, the skin of his face was shining, and they were afraid to come near him. But Moses called to them, and Aaron and all the leaders of the congregation returned to him, and Moses spoke with them. Afterward, all the Israelites came near, and he gave them in commandment all that the Lord had spoken with him on Mount Sinai. When Moses had finished speaking with them, he put a veil on his face. But whenever Moses went in before the Lord to speak with him, he would take the veil off until he came out. And when he came out and told the Israelites what he had been commanded, the Israelites would see the face of Moses, that the skin of his face was shining. And Moses would put the veil on his face again until he went to speak with him. And here endeth the dance of many veils, or actually just one veil, on and off, again. Come on. Okay. Tim just turned a huge bright light on his face. So that when I looked down from the book, I looked at him and his face was shining. He didn't have a veil over it. Put the tissue over my face. Yeah. It was pretty funny. And also his face was like frozen in the headlights. It was pretty funny.
A deer.
Actually slightly creepy.
Well, you know, it's better to have the shiny face than the horns.
Is there a story where somebody like meets with Satan or something and comes back with horns? No.
You've seen statue of Moses, right? It has horns. Because for whatever reason, when St. Jerome was translating the Old Testament into Latin for the Vulgate, he made Moses horny instead.
Sorry.
I didn't mean it like that.
He made it so that Moses...
So he said basically, instead of like...
You mean that Moses came down off the mountain with horns on his head?
With a set of horns. So if you look at...
Okay, that's just weird.
Go look it up. Look up Michelangelo's Moses, and it has horns coming out of his forehead. Yeah.
Part of what's funny about this to me, when I look back on it, when I remember this story, I remember it differently than it appears. I remember that the people couldn't stand to look at him, and so he covered his face.
Yeah.
While he was with the people. Mm-hmm. But this says that when he's with the people, telling them what God said, he leaves his face there shining. And then he covers it. And so that either when he's speaking with God, which throws me because, again, they're just so using the male pronoun him for God, but okay. Mm-hmm. When he's either with God or telling the people what God's commandments are, he's got it off. And it's so funny. Because that's not how I remembered it, but it says it.
Yeah. Well, they're still afraid. I mean, it says that they're afraid.
Yeah, but I guess Moses keeps the veil off so that they can hear the commandments with the special effects that go with it.
Well, is it the special effects or is it when he is proclaiming an oracle or instructions from God, he's reflecting God's light, because that's ultimately what happens. Like, so one of the interesting things with this reading is, you know, for the previous 40 days and 40 nights, which sounds an awful lot like the season that's coming up, 40 days of Lent.
Ooh.
Moses has been on Sinai, right?
And right.
He's been in the presence of God. This is the second time that he's gone up there. The first time he came down with a couple of tablets that God had carved God's self, and he came down and found out that all the Israelites
were partying
hard and basically doing all sorts of horrible, horrible things, including worshiping a graven image.
Right, which they made out of gold.
And so he smashed those tablets, and he's like, oh, and he has to go back up and carve new ones.
My bad.
And so it's during that time where he's with God again, receiving the law again, that he begins to collect enough photons to apparently come out of his face.
But so, I said it sort of flippantly, like he wanted the special effects to show. Mm-hmm. But I suspect that it's actually, especially since it didn't stick the first time, it's part of the power. It's coming from him, and it's shining all the time. It's not just shining when he's talking.
No.
And I think there might be a sense in which he wants them to look on that power.
Yeah.
And recognize that this is not just him talking. Mm-hmm. That this is something mysterious and supernatural and...
holy. This is something holy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I didn't remember it that way. I remembered it that the people couldn't, because I think that's another part of it, is that the people can't stand to look on this light. I think they want him to cover it, because why would he cover it otherwise?
It is pretty scary.
Yeah. I think people don't want to see it. I think it's sort of like with angels. Whenever in the Bible angels appear, the first thing they usually say is, don't be afraid. Which tells you the sight of an angel must be terrifying.
Yeah.
And when Moses is shining like this, there must be something really terrifying about it. Although I think it would be weird to see somebody walking around with a veil.
Absolutely dazzling. Like, it's hard to look at because it's so bright. It's like staring into the sun.
Yeah. So. I think it's... But he makes them do it when he's telling them, until he takes it off when he's with God. It's just funny that I had remembered it differently. And I think there's something to the idea that he wants them to look on him that way when he's speaking to them, that it might make them believe.
It's a good pedagogical tool.
Yeah. It's like wearing a suit to a business meeting.
Yeah.
Or like fake dark glasses or something to make you look different.
I don't get that one, but okay.
Well, that's because you wear glasses. I just wear reading glasses. But like, I have a niece, and she's only like 10.
Oh, actually, you mean like the lenses aren't actually correct?
Yeah.
Is
that, oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, I know. It's really cute.
Like the hipster thing. Yeah, got it.
Yeah. So what else should we say about this story? What does it mean to us now? Let's separate it apart from the story, the gospel story that's going to follow. Mm-hmm. What does this mean for us today?
Well, when I think about it, you know, you think about stepping away to spend time with God and how that changes you. So when you go on a retreat, or if you just, you know, set some quiet time apart amid all the hectic stuff that happens, and you truly are present to God, not just listening to your laundry list of God, please, and Jesus, we just's, but actually spending time to listen to what God might be saying back to you, taking the time to quiet yourself with that. You can't help but be changed.
Right.
And I think that that's something that is active here.
So I, along those lines, I feel like I've known people who shine, who are so fully themselves, so fully living into who they were made to be, that they sparkle and shine. And I wonder if that's part of what this is like, is that Moses is finally who God made him to be, because he's not shining when he comes down the first time.
No, he's pissed the first time.
And yeah, and yet he was with God the same, you know, but there's something different this time. And we all know there people who shine. And maybe we sometimes feel like we shine when either we've been, you know, on retreat or something where we feel close to God, but also I think sometimes we can feel close to God when we're our most creative selves or our most expressive, or
we're fully living into the gifts we have. Yeah.
Yeah. That I think we might shine. And you know, something else, people don't always want to see that. People are, some people are drawn to it and some people don't want to see it because it might remind them of the way in which they're not shining.
Yeah. It's a good point.
Yeah. Okay, so shall we move on to the gospel?
The gospel. And we're going to do the full gospel.
Ah, because there's a bracketed portion.
There's a bracketed portion, but we're going to go ahead
You need
and
not read this.
You probably actually won't hear the bracketed part because it gets a little uncomfortable. But
well, you won't at St. John's this weekend because we have a jazz mass, and so there's going to be a lot of music in our annual meeting, and so we're being very pragmatic and trimming where we can trim. So
the Cajun food. I miss the Cajun food.
I know. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
But okay.
So you are?
Yeah,
right.
go ahead.
So the Gospel's from Luke, chapter 9, verses 28 to 36. And then the bracketed part is 37 through 43, alpha, split. So,
because for God's sakes, why should you have to finish the sentence or
no.
the verse?
Well, it's a little bit weird. Yeah. It wraps on, but you know, these numbers are something that somebody added somewhere along the line and made sense to them, but it doesn't make sense otherwise.
Right.
All right, so here we go. Jesus took with him Peter and John and James and went up on the mountain to pray. And while he was praying, the appearance of his face changed and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly they saw two men, Moses and Elijah, talking to him. They appeared in glory and were speaking of his departure, which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem. Now Peter and his companions were weighed down with sleep, but since they had stayed awake, they saw his glory and the two men who stood with him. Just as they were leaving him, Peter said to Jesus, "Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah," not knowing what he said. While he was saying this, a cloud came and overshadowed them, and they were terrified as they entered the cloud. Then from the cloud came a voice that said, "This is my son, my chosen, listen to him." When the voice was spoken, Jesus was found alone. And they kept silent, and in those days told no one any of the things that they had seen. On the next day, when they had come down from the mountain, a great crowd met him. Just then a man from the crowd shouted, "Teacher, I beg you to look at my son. He is my only child." Suddenly a spirit seizes him, and all at once he shrieks. It convulses him until he foams at the mouth. It mauls him and will scarcely leave him. "I begged your disciples to cast it out. They could not." Jesus answered, "You faithless and perverse generation, how much longer must I bear with you? Bring your son here." While he was coming, the demon dashed him to the ground in convulsions. But Jesus rebuked the unclean spirit, healed the boy, and gave him back to his father. And all were astounded at the greatness of God. And here endeth the lesson.
Yeah, and here endeth Jesus healing the leprosy, but calling people names.
Well, not leprosy.
No, I mean calling them the faithless and perverse generation. What should we say about this? We get the opportunity to talk about this once a year, twice a year. Peter's adorable.
Master, it's good for us to be here.
Let us make
dwelling. Know what else to say.
But I just feel like I have to say something and do something because this is so cool.
It's like, whoa.
And you know he's so embarrassed later.
He is. The other part that's interesting here is they appeared in glory. We're speaking of his departure.
Right.
And that actually the Greek word there is Exodus.
Mm.
So, you know, you have this juxtaposition of Jesus' passion and death, resurrection, and ascension as an exodus.
From slavery into freedom.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. And so is the cloud that comes over them. And they're terrified. But it's in that cloud. So the sort of mystery, it's sometimes when something you don't understand envelops you, that you can actually hear something true.
Yeah.
That even though they're here in the presence of seeing Jesus the way Jesus really is, they don't get it. And they can only really understand it once the rest of their senses have been enveloped in this thing they don't understand.
Right. And it also calls to mind the cloud that followed by day and the fire by night in Exodus. And that enveloped the top of Mount Sinai when Moses was up there carving that second set.
Well, and also it's the words are very similar to the words when Jesus was baptized. "This is my son, the beloved, in whom I am well pleased."
You know, so you have that pivot point where he goes into the desert when he's baptized. And then you have this pivot point where he has set his face to Jerusalem after this, Luke tells us.
Right.
He set his face to the work that he is going to do.
And
there.
Each of them has in it an affirmation from God that Jesus is God's son.
Yes.
What's unclear is who hears this in when Jesus is baptized. What's unclear is whether everybody can hear it.
Or does it sound like thunder?
Right. Or does only John the Baptizer hear it? Or does Jesus hear it too? But here it's clear that Peter and James and John hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, wait. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really say. It says the cloud overshadowed them, and then a voice came. So it implies that all three of them heard it. But that's interesting that God chooses, at least as we hear it in the Gospel of Luke, to take these two moments and affirm Jesus is God's son. And I wonder what that, I mean, this is not unintentional. Why is that so important that we hear that again? I guess, or is it, because this one, "You are my son," is not for Jesus's ears. This is for the disciples.
No.
And they say, listen
really
to
Peter's.
Him.
Yeah, this is really for, I think, Peter, especially where he just opens his mouth and starts talking. He's like, "I'm going to build you booths like you do at Sukkot."
Right.
You know, which implies that you're going to be camping there and staying there.
You're going to stay there.
You're in this like peak moment that you want to
keep,
capture, cling to, and hold on.
Right. You want to box it up, literally.
Right. But in the end, all of us have to come back down off the mountain. Even when we go out and we have those times in our lives where we have the moments with God, that we come back and people know that we've changed somehow because of this experience, we still have to come down off the mountain. And that's really the reason why you'd have this second part to talk about, because Jesus comes down off the mountain and there's work to be done.
And he's pissed about it.
A child to be healed. But he's not pissed about having to do it. about it needing to be done, he's kind of pissed that his disciples weren't able to because they lacked faith. Right? Because then you go from here.
It's not clear though who he's talking to. Jesus answered, like the Father says, "I begged your disciples, but they could not."
Yeah.
And Jesus answered, "You faithless and perverse generation." It's not clear who he's talking to or about. I feel like...
What is clear is that he realizes that, how much longer must I be with you? Like, he knows that his time's coming to an end.
And see...
His face is now set to Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And the work is now going to have to be done by those he leaves behind.
And I feel like he's pissed because they couldn't do it.
Right.
And so they're coming to him. And I...
Yes.
I mean, I have to say, I understand this reaction. I certainly have had it myself, and it's awful. It's awful because you realize, wait a minute, that's what I'm called to do, and I shouldn't be so annoyed by it. I want to go back to a second to what they hear in the cloud. "This is my son, my chosen. Listen to him."
Mm-hmm.
What is God trying to get them to listen to that they haven't been hearing at this point and going forward? It's not in the Gospel of Luke where they're clueless, completely and utterly clueless about who Jesus is.
Well, you mean Mark, right?
No, I mean, it's in the Gospel of Mark where they're completely and utterly clueless.
Yeah.
It's not the Gospel of Luke that we're looking at where he says, "Listen to him."
Yeah.
What is God, why that phrase, why that now? I'm just, you know, again, if this is supposed to be a bookend or an answer or a mirror in some way to the moment when Jesus is baptized and the dove comes and says, "This is my son." What are they supposed to listen to that they're not listening to?
Well, clearly a lot of them haven't gotten it because they weren't able to effect the miracle on the boy down at the bottom of the mountain, right? Not just Peter and John and James, but the entire crew of disciples. So maybe this is just a reiteration that, hey, you got to keep your ears open and be learning here.
Right, right. Which is then affirmed when Jesus gets mad that... When Jesus gets mad that they aren't able to heal the kid, that's consistent. Like, how long must I be with you? Like, I'm not going to be with you much longer. You guys have to figure this out yourself. I just wonder what follows in Luke. You know, what keeps coming to my mind, is it Luke where, after having denied him three times, Peter sits with him on the beach? One of the post-resurrection stories where they grill the fish tacos and Jesus says, "Do you love me?" Is that in Luke?
John 21.
So it does have the story of the road to Emmaus. I'm kind of thinking,
yes,
what God, I feel like God must be pointing to something. When God says, "Listen to him," there's something that must be coming that Jesus says that God really wants them to pay attention to. I wonder what's next. I wonder what it is. And maybe we'll just have to see as this next parts unfold. Because, I mean, there's still an awful lot to come.
Yeah, a whole lot of healing and miracles coming.
Yeah, there's still an awful lot. So there's still, it's not just the passion.
There's a lot more lessons to be made,
yeah,
to be had.
Yeah, so it's still, so maybe it is more like a, you're not listening.
Just pay attention to what's coming up.
And you're not listening.
Haven't gotten it so far.
You're not getting it.
Right. They're not listening.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. So what is this?
But to be fair to them, I mean, we don't get it either.
So you just said, to be fair to them, we don't get it either. And I was just about to say to you, like, how can we translate this to our own lives? But that's not very hard because we don't understand this either. And we would do the same, like, stupid thing if we saw an angel or something happened, we would be like stammering idiots like Peter.
Yeah. Or if we were hanging out with Jesus, you'd be like, you know, I can't do that for you, but I know someone who can.
Right. Oh my God.
He's right over here.
You're totally right.
Because that's what people do. I mean, that's what people do.
You're totally right. We would say,
yeah.
Yeah, I can't do that for you, but this guy can't. Oh my God, we do that, Tim.
Yep. We absolutely do it.
And Jesus is like, oh my God. Like,
come on, guys, you can do this. You're empowered to do this. Go do this.
So, "This is my son, my chosen. Listen to him." Jesus tells us, "I love you. I am with you always. You can do all things through him who strengthens you." Anything is possible with God. I mean, I guess those aren't direct quotes. Actually, we have no idea what Jesus actually said, but
some of them are. But it's an interesting mishmash.
I know, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm just thinking.
You're pulling out all the quotes that you see athletes like to use.
Good job. It's like I almost have all those posters around me, but I don't. No, but like the things we grab for when we feel helpless.
Yeah.
But we don't believe them any more than these guys did, and they lived with him. I mean, Jesus must have shown himself, right? I mean, Well, unlike just
they
in
lived
this,
with him for three
I mean,
years.
Here his clothes get dazzling.
Can I make
white.
A point?
Yeah.
They lived with him for 3 years. You and I have been following him for years longer than that. And we still screw it up.
Right. But we're not in his physical presence the way they were.
No, but we've certainly been in his presence and we've gotten these stories.
Right.
And we've been through these stories year after year for most of our adult lives. So.
Right. I just sometimes, I take solace in the fact that these guys actually knew him. Yeah. They saw him do things that can't be explained away by...
Yeah, there.
Right.
Mind blown.
Right.
Yeah.
And the way God works now is more, still mind-blowing things, but things that we could explain away as coincidence or science or something.
Or we just don't have the science to explain it yet. And blah, blah, blah.
So I sometimes take solace in the idea that these people, you know, Peter, who had so much faith that he followed Jesus out on the water, is also the same guy that when he started to get afraid.
Two or three steps, and he's like, wait.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I can't be really doing this. So, yeah, this is hard for us. And yeah, we've had longer, but we haven't had Jesus in the flesh in the same way they have.
No, not in the same way. But we've had Jesus and still... We sink when we step out of
right,
the boat and
right.
all that. So I can't hold them too much to it.
No, I mean, I admire them for it. It makes me feel human. It makes me feel understood. So let's do Lectio.
Lectio time.
Teacher, I beg you to look at my son. He is my only child. Teacher, I beg you to look at my son. He is my only child. Teacher, I beg you to look at my son. He is my only child. You know what comes to me?
What's that?
Jesus is also God's only child.
He is. You know what came to me? Behold the man. Because ecce, you know, would be the same Latin in both cases. As when Pilate says, behold the man after Jesus is scourged. Look at my son.
The desperation is prefigured here.
Totally. It's desperate, and it's also that deep desire for you or your loved one to be known.
I beg you to look at my son.
Yeah, just look at him.
Watch him suffer. See him suffer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had never thought about this as a voicing of the same kind of agony of God. Look at my son. He is my only child. When so many of the disciples desert him, they can't be there at the cross. It's the women.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just told Peter and James and John, this is my son. I had never really thought of this. And then Jesus answers his desperation with annoyance, still heals his son, which I'm sure the father doesn't really care about. I mean, I'm sure the father doesn't care that Jesus prefaced it with you faithless and perverse generation. Because
he still gets the outcome.
Once he heals his son, nothing else matters.
No.
He healed the boy and gave him back to his father, just like Jesus goes back to his father. And all were astounded at the greatness of God. Wow, this is just a little story prefiguring the whole thing.
It really is, isn't it?
Yeah.
And in order for it to happen, he had to come down off the mountain.
Let's get back to your point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's our prayer?
I want to bless those people who, just like I often am, are looking to God to make things right, to do the work, to work the magic to save us, as opposed to utilizing the power we've been given as the children of God to affect the change we need in the world. And I just ask for a blessing on, and that in the end, I suppose that's every Christian at some point or another, just blessing in those moments to remember not to feel guilty about not following through or giving up, and to realize that this exasperation that Jesus presents is not a condemnation of us, but just a reminder that the work is ours and we have been empowered to do it, and to let go of guilt for those times in the past where we failed to do so.
So I'm going to go to all those people who are desperate for healing for someone they love. My blessing, my prayer is for you all, that you're not alone, that when you cry out, "Look at my child," God sees. And I wish we would. I wish we as a culture, as a people, would see better the suffering of all of God's children and respond with things like health care and mental health counseling and better schools and clean water.
And relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amen.
Yeah. Whew. Yeah, and then starting next week, it'll be Lent. Which,
that's right.
Like,
don't forget to go get
your ashes. And have pancakes on Tuesday night.
Oh, yeah.
And
bacon. Lots and lots of bacon.
And hear us explain the ways in which you don't actually have to give up all kinds of stuff during Lent. But we'll talk about Lent. Yeah.
We will.
So thanks for listening.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Okay. See you next week. Bye now.
Bye. Edgar Bassey studies the scripture for the proper lectio. She strokes her chin thoughtfully as she looks for the words that will speak deeply to her soul.
Stop!
So she can share them with others. She chuckles at the golf commentary coming through her headphones as she stares at the words that will eventually reach out, grab her heart.
She puts him on mute so she doesn't have to be distracted. But then she feels guilty about putting him on mute, and she undoes the mute.
Yeah. Just wants to remind her that payback's a bitch.
She's never forgotten that.